9 of the church Bibles. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, "Samson is here," so they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, "At dawn, we'll kill him." But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate together with the two posts and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so that we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued." Samson answered her, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh thongs that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh thongs that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. With men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the thongs as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, "You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied." He said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then, with men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. Delilah then said to Samson, "Until now you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." He replied, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with the pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with the pin. Again she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric. Then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the 3rd time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I've been a Nazarite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more, he has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he didn't know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain." While they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "O sovereign Lord, remember me, O God. Please strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistine for my 2 eyes." And Samson reached towards the 2 central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might. And down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Then his brothers and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him between Zorah and Eshtahol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel for 20 years. And God bless to us that reading from his word. You all know the story of Samson and Delilah. People have written songs about it. Samson, I think, is a fascinating character. There's four, I've only read you one chapter because we haven't got enough time for me to read you four chapters, and this isn't Jack and Nori. And you could probably do an entire sermon series just on Samson. But he's this big, strong bloke, isn't he? And he seems to have the brain of a spoon. To be perfectly honest, he will do anything for the woman in his life. And he thinks he's being ever so funny. "Oh, just tie me up like this. Oh, just tie me up like that. And then I'll beat him up." I want to ask you a question. Do you think Samson loses his strength because he has his hair cut? No. Samson doesn't lose his strength because he has his hair cut, but he does lose his strength because he goes against a promise he made to God. Does God not like Samson anymore because he has his hair cut and because Samson is an idiot? No. God doesn't not like him. And actually, Samson kind of represents all of Israel at this point. Because as we've seen in the book of Judges, the Israelites do evil in the sight of the Lord, and then they cry out to God, and what happens? God raises up a redeemer, and then they get redeemed, and then there's peace, and then they do evil in the sight of the Lord, and then it keeps on going round and round and round. And God continues to be gracious, even though as earthly mothers and fathers, we might not be as gracious. After a while, watching your kids constantly screw up like he does, and having to watch the Israelites turn against him and prostitute themselves before other gods, we kind of go, "Enough's enough, I'm cutting you off." But God never does that. God remains faithful the entire time. But in this passage, in this chapter, we actually see Samson working out as a representation of all of Israel. He's the leader. And what happens in verse 1? One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. What have we seen the Israelites do every single time? They did evil in the sight of the Lord, and that generally was they began to worship other gods. They'd found someone else in order to have a relationship with. And it was only for what they could get. All of you are old enough to be able to cope with that, with the illusion that's going on with the prostitute. The prostitute is being used by Samson purely for his own gratification. The gods that are being used by Israel are purely for their own gratification. It's so that they can get a good harvest, they can get good rain, they could get good fertility, they could find whatever it is they've lost. That's what's going on. And here we have Samson just living that out as the leader of the people. Really fascinating fact, right at the end of the chapter, how many years did he lead for? 20. And what do we know is a good time to lead? 40. Well, that tells us something. you know, whatever his name was, the first judge we looked at, he led for 80 years. He did really well. Doubly good. Samson leads for 20. Only half the amount of time that should have been there. So he was kind of doing what God wanted, but he was very impressed with himself. And he was drunk with the power and was prepared to use that power to do whatever he wanted. And he walks around like he was untouchable. You have all these Philistines waiting at the gate. And there's comedy here. You're supposed to giggle occasionally. You don't have to be serious just because it's church. So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, "At dawn we'll kill him." But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up, took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all, and just walked off. Huge guy, just, right, I'm not bothering anymore. I'll bring the gate to me, shall I? He's just, no one can touch me. The responses that he gives to Delilah, this woman that he supposedly loves and really can't see is trying to kill him. Come, now, come on, tell me how we beat you up. And every time you tell me how to beat you up, a load of Philistines turn up in order to attack you. Now, after the first time, I might have been a bit suspicious. The second time, I think we may have been going our separate ways. He's like, let's do it four times. I'm so lost and in love with you, and I'm so stupid, and I am so convinced of my own strength that there's no way anyone's going to get the better of me. And I am so taking God for granted that there's no way anyone will ever get the better of me, because God will show up. Do you see the absolute arrogance of Samson? Christian leaders across the globe fall into this. I can name you at least three in the last couple of years where they think they're untouchable. They've been great men and women of God, and they've done great things, and they've said brilliant stuff. I don't want to name them in case I get sued, but they've said brilliant stuff. Excellent apologists, brilliant church leaders, and you go, oh, these guys have really got it. But then when you find out what's been going on behind the scenes, you go, at what point did you think you were getting away with that? There was one particular church, and I'm only making allusions, but I'm sure you can work it out, where there was a culture of not questioning because they were the celebrity minister. Everyone knew something was going on, but we won't question it because actually that kind of destroys the image that we've got going on of who they are. So I don't want us to think that Samson is uniquely stupid or uniquely arrogant. We can all be like this. And we can all think we're doing things with the best of intentions. But actually, we need to learn humility, and we must be humble before God. There's an old country song, it's not that old, but they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Because Samson had lost sight of who God was and is. And it takes him losing his sight for him to actually work out who God is. If I'm going to hazard a guess, he loses his strength because God drains it from him. and he allows him to be passed into the hands of the oppressor. If you look back through Judges, this is what happens to the people of Israel. They do evil in the sight of the Lord, and God places them into the hands of their oppressors. And he lets them do all manner of things to them because they need to learn. So God drains Samson of his strength in the same way that he drains Israel of its strength, because this true strength only comes from the Lord. The true victory, the true power only comes from the Lord. Now, we all know that if you do weight training, you can lift heavy stuff. It's not like his muscles disappeared. Something else happened. Samuel has decided to start. He wants to do weights. It's quite hilarious to watch, to be honest, but he wants to do weights, and so he's got a 5, no he hasn't, he's got a 2.5 kilogram dumbbell. He's doing ever so well. And he's going, "Look at me, Dad, look." And he's posing in front of the mirror. He's done it like for a week now, and he's expecting to see results in that week. And he's going, "Look, look at me." And like, it's 2.5 kilograms. But then I'm thinking to myself, well, I started on 2.5 kilograms, and I'm not lifting 2.5 kilograms anymore. I've gone on to 3.5. But actually, the more you use your muscle, the stronger you are. And so that's not what's happened. Now, as you get older, perhaps you lose some of that muscle mass, but actually there's, the more you work that muscle and the regularly you use that muscle, the regularity with which you use that muscle, the strength is there. I'm just looking around at the men in the room. You're all big guys. You've got strength within your bodies. You can lift stuff that some of the ladies in the room can't. That's why they keep us around, apparently. But actually, it's about that. But what if God took this great, big, mighty man and went, "You're as weak as a child now. You're back to your 2.5 dumbbells. You're not going to be able to beat anyone up. Because you've got convinced it's all about you. And it's not. Your strength, your leadership, your ability does not come from you. It comes from me giving it to you." So then we get to the point of the death of Samson, and I actually find this really fascinating. They've got him, now he's clearly still got his strength, because what do they put him in prison to do? To grind. So they're putting him in prison to grind, because he's a great big bloke, and he's probably doing the job of a donkey, walking around, pushing the grindstone, as it were, or dragging the grindstone like a donkey would. That's what he's there to do. So there's still the strength there. He just doesn't understand that he's still got all the equipment. He just needs to humble himself before God. And then you see what happens. The grace shines out. You've got everybody that could be anybody gathered together for this performance. And he says, "Just put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. And then as he's holding on to something solid, he cries out to God. And he prays the prayer of the sinner. You know in Luke, before we just read that prayer, you know in Luke's gospel, Luke 18, I think it is, where you have the Pharisee and the tax collector? And Jesus just points out which one of these two is you know, right before God. The Pharisee stands there and says, "Oh God, I do absolutely everything right. I give a tenth of my income. I fast twice a week, which isn't required, but I fast twice a week and cover my face in, you know, sackcloth and all the rest of it. Look at me. Aren't I great?" Well, what's he praying for? Because he already thinks he's fantastic. And then you have the tax collector who says, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." He can't even look up to heaven. He's actually looking down and says, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." And Jesus says, "I tell you the truth, it's the tax collector, not the Pharisee, that goes away justified before God, because he has humbled himself before him." So listen to what Samson prays. "O sovereign Lord, remember me, O God." He humbles himself. He's like, "I don't have the right to stand before you, and I'm going to acknowledge you for who you are. You are my sovereign Lord. You are the king, and I'm not." That wonderful phrase. What's the difference between man and God? Is God never thinks he's us. "Sovereign Lord, remember me, O God. Please strengthen me one more time. Allow me to do the things that you wanted me to do. And I know I've messed up, but let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." And with that final push, God gives him the grace. God is gracious with him, and God gives him the strength to destroy those who are oppressing him. Now, you haven't got to be a genius to look at every single story in Judges and see how Samson represents Israel. Because that's exactly what happens in every other story. The people do evil, the people are oppressed, they cry out, God gives them strength, and peace comes. The bad news is that from this point onwards in Judges, there's no peace. There's no peace in the land that descends, because the people have got so far from God that they're all doing what they please. But that would be a highlight for next week. But the point is that we need to make sure that we are constantly humbling ourselves before God. That we don't go, "Look at what I've done. Aren't I amazing?" That we don't get little Jack Horner syndrome. But instead, we are the people who are prepared to go, "Do you know what? Through God's strength." We could be really tempted with, for example, with the Christmas walkthrough, to go, "Yeah, look at what we've done. Look how brilliant we are. Look how fantastic we are. Haven't we done really, really well? Look, we've got 8 schools, possibly 9. We've got 600 kids coming. This is going to be fantastic. Look, we've got all these people traipsing through the doors. We're really making a big difference for God. I bet he's really pleased with this. I bet if we weren't around, you know, God would just be going, I've got no way of getting into Lyndhurst." But we need to make sure that we're constantly giving all of the glory back to the one who created us, the one who strengthens us, the one who gives us the abilities and the skills and the talents in order to do what he has for us. Can you just come off the slide for me for a moment, please? So this is our verse for the year. "If anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever." Everything that we do as a church must be to give the glory to God. If I preach a brilliant sermon on that one occasion, All the glory must go to God. If I happen to sing and hit the right note, all the glory must go to God. If we have a music group one week and they play brilliantly, we are not putting the music group up here to worship the music group, but we're here so that they can help us worship the God who created us. Whatever it is, whether you're putting the bins out, doing the teas and coffees, walking through the walkthrough, building it, whatever it is, it's to the glory of God, and it's not the glory of ourselves. And it's reminding ourselves that we need to keep humble. God blesses us and has blessed us immensely over the last year. Massively. You know, I don't think I've had known a year where it's been as fascinating, and I've had people that I've never even expected to come and ask me for baptism. Just walking up and going, can I get baptized? And I'm like, okay. I've had conversations, I've seen God moving, but it's not to do with me. I mean, so I'll give you an example with Naomi. So I'm driving along with Naomi, and I said, and I'm thinking, I wonder why she didn't get baptized with Hannah. Because Naomi, actually, of the two, is the one that's got it more and has understood things better, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm like, so what is it? Why? And I'm thinking, well, God just went, why don't you ask her? I want to, I'm driving. And so I said, look, Naomi, what is it? What is the barrier? Because I just feel like there's a barrier between you just taking that next step. And you give me a load of rubbish that, you know, Hannah's done it now, so you can't. Well, that's twaddle. And you tell me all sorts of other things. And what on earth is going on with that? And she's like, well, it's just because. And then I'm driving, gone a little bit further, and I've got ask her about mum and dad. I'm like, what? I don't want to do that. So I said, okay, Naomi, is this something to do with mum and dad? As in my mum and dad. At which point, the barrier removed, because I had floodgates. Literally, she is crying her eyes out. I'm like, what on earth is going on? What is it? I wanted them to be there. Oh, right, I can deal with that. So then she gets even more emotional, so I get emotional. And then I'm thinking I'm not actually fit to drive. Because apparently if you can't see, that's a bad thing. But God kind of took the wheel at this point. And we're talking away, and she just went, so I just want them to be there. And I said, how do you know they're not going to be? We're told that whenever a sinner repents, there's a party in heaven. So guess who's going to be number one guests at the point when you know, go, oh, that was it? It was like flicking a switch. It was absolutely, and just, wow, that wasn't me. That was God moving. And God has moved so much over the last year, and we just need to remember to give him the glory. It's not because we're a brilliant church or I'm a brilliant pastor. It's because God has chosen to move and do something. And we just need to remember to give the glory and the praise to him. Our salvation doesn't come from us. Our salvation comes from Jesus Christ. We don't stand here, look at me, I'm assured of my salvation. I can only stand here and be assured of my salvation because I know the God who loves me, who sent Christ to die for me and raised him to life for me. So we must always act with humility. Otherwise we end up like Samson or the people of Israel all the way through this fascinating